Well, good morning, Perth, and good afternoon, everyone. It's my great pleasure to introduce this afternoon's seminar to be delivered by Justice Stewart. He really needs little introduction amongst a maritime audience, but nevertheless, I will tell you that he graduated from the University of Natal, cum laude, and then from the University of Oxford with a BCL first class, where he was a Rhodes Scholar. From there, he practiced in South Africa and was appointed senior counsel there in 2006. He then made for us the very good decision to come to Australia and has practiced at the bar in Sydney from 2011 until his appointment to this court in 2019. He's had an extensive practice in Admiralty and maritime law, and is regularly invited to speak at maritime law conferences where he adds gravitas and wit. So we're hoping for the same this afternoon as he addresses the very complicated case of the Thor Commander and the interesting question of common law salvage in the Australian context. So I will hand over to Justice Stewart.
thank you, Justice Harrington, and to Milans and Tony Tesserero from this court for organising this lecture. I should say it was my good fortune to decide to come to Australia, and here I am. And the title for my lecture is Salvage Learnings from the Thor Commander. And the impetus for this paper is the judgment of my colleague Justice Rearies in the case of the Thor Commander delivered in this court nearly a year ago. I disclose at the outset that I was lead counsel on the losing side, that was for the vessel interests, which in part accounts for the deliberate ambiguity in the title that I've chosen. Not satisfied with the correctness of aspects of the judgment, the vessel interests appealed. The appeal was due to be heard by the full court in February this year, but the dispute was settled shortly before the hearing. The result is that we have only the first instance judgment, and we don't know to what degree the reasoning or findings in that judgment might have been altered by the full court. As will shortly become apparent, the judgment covers a number of issues, only some of which relate to salvage. I intend to focus on a particular salvage aspect of the judgment, that is, whether it was necessary for the purported salvors in the case, being the owners of the Zinfar High, to be volunteers in order to qualify for a salvage reward, and whether in the circumstances of the case they were volunteers. Interestingly, those issues were not in dispute, but they are nevertheless dealt with at some length in the judgment. I take that as justification to do likewise. So starting with the facts, the relevant facts for present purposes are relatively straightforward. The Thor Commander was contracted to carry a cargo of copper anodes owned by the plaintiff, Mount Isa Mines, from Puerto Angamos in Chile to Townsville in northeast Queensland. On day one of the incident, which was 11 January 2015, the vessel was in relatively close proximity to the Great Barrier Reef towards the end of her voyage when, in the mid-afternoon, her main engine failed. She was drifting slowly towards the reef as the chief engineer sought to identify the problem with the engine and fix it. Within an hour or so of the breakdown, the master had notified the Australian authorities of the situation. He said that their position from the nearest reef was 17 nautical miles and they were drifting towards it at a speed of between 0.8 and 1.5 knots. That's approximately 1 nautical mile per hour. Conditions were otherwise calm and there was little wind. By late that evening, the vessel owners, Marship, had secured a tug, the Smith Leopard, then in Gladstone, to rendezvous with the vessel and tow it to Gladstone for repairs. The Smith Leopard departed Gladstone at first light on day two, with an estimated time of arrival early the following morning, that is day three. In the meanwhile, the Thor Commander would continue to drift as no repairs had been possible. By this time, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority, AMSA, had assumed responsibility for the situation insofar as the Australian authorities were concerned. AMSA was not satisfied that the Smith Leopard would reach the Thor Commander in time to prevent her drifting onto the reef. Thus, early on day two, at much the same time as the Smith Leopard departed Gladstone, AMSA issued a PAN-PAN, which is an international alert of an urgent situation. It asked all vessels within 10 hours of Thor Commander's position that would be available to provide her with immediate assistance to prevent her drifting onto the reefs, or to act as standby for rescue, to contact the Joint Rescue Coordination Centre, the JRCC. It was said that Thor Commander was at that time 16 nautical miles from the nearest reef. Zinfa High responded to the PAN-PAN and proceeded towards the Thor Commander. Zinfa High was a Capesize bulk carrier of some 175,000 deadweight tons with a length overall of 290 meters, which is to say a very large bulk carrier. Thor Commander, in contrast, was 9,739 deadweight tons with a length overall of 132 meters, and she was heavily loaded. Before diverting in response to the PAN-PAN, Zinfa High was steaming in ballast in a southwesterly direction to Newcastle to load cargo. By early afternoon, still on day two, Zinfa High was standing by near the Thor Commander. There was something of a standoff between the vessel's respective owners with regard to the conclusion of a salvage contract on the Lloyd's Open Form. A bit later, when Thor Commander was approximately 12 nautical miles from the nearest reef, and the Smith Leopard's ETA was approximately 9 a.m. the following day, that is day three, AMSA gave a direction under Section 11 of the Protection of the Sea Powers of Intervention Act 1981 of the Commonwealth. The direction required Thor Commander to accept a tow, if safe to do so, and Zinfa High to take Thor Commander under tow and to hold her in a safe position until relieved by the Smith Leopard. Pausing briefly here, the Intervention Act was introduced to give effect to the International Convention relating to the intervention on the high seas in cases of oil pollution casualties of 1969, convention with a typically long name. The convention was a result of the 1967 Torrey Canyon disaster, when an oil spill from that tanker off the west coast of Cornwall, England, caused an unprecedented environmental disaster and signaled the need for a state to be empowered to take necessary measures to protect itself from pollution incidents on the high seas. The Australian Legislative Response, the Intervention Act, provides for the intervention of AMSA not only in the case of casualties on the high seas, but also in the case of casualties in Australian coastal waters or in the Australian Exclusive Economic Zone. It will immediately be appreciated that the direction by AMSA that required the tow is centrally relevant to the question of whether the subsequent tow by Zinfa High had the quality of being voluntary within the meaning of the law of salvage. Returning to the facts, conditions remained calm, and despite the substantial difference in size and maneuverability of the vessels, the tow was established relatively easily on the first attempt. Assistance was given by a Queensland Police launch, the Lyle M. Hoey, to run a messenger line from the Zinfa High to the Thor Commander, which was then used to establish the 370-meter tow line. The Zinfa High then slowly towed the Thor Commander further away from the reef for about 5 hours. Thor Commander then drifted again for about 6 hours, with the Zinfa High close by on standby, until Smith Leopard arrived on the scene early on day three. AMSA then released Zinfa High, and she returned to her original course to Newcastle. In all, Zinfa High was taken off her course by the events involving the Thor Commander for a little over 24 hours. It took another 2 days for Smith Leopard to tow Thor Commander to Gladstone, where she arrived early on day five. The owners of Thor Commander declared general average, with the result that all those sharing in the maritime adventure, being essentially them, that is the owners of the Thor Commander and Mount Isa Mines, the owners of the cargo, would ordinarily be liable in proportion to their respective values for the expenses of preserving the ship and cargo. Those expenses included any liability for salvage, Smith Leopard's charges, and emergency repairs in Gladstone in order to complete the contractual voyage to Townsville. A number of claims arose out of those events. independently of the proceedings that came before the court, Zinfa High's owners claimed salvage against Thor Commander's owners and against cargo owners, Mount Isa Mines. Both those claims were independently settled. In the case of the Thor Commander, for $100,000, and in the case of the cargo, for $1 million. The agreed salvage values were approximately $7 million for the vessel and approximately $63 million, that's US in both cases, for the cargo, which is, say, a ratio of approximately 1:10. Also independently of the proceedings, pursuant to its general average declaration and based on an adjustment done in London, Thor Commander's owners demanded a GA contribution from Mount Isa Mines of a little over $1 million. That was to be the subject of foreign arbitration proceedings. In the proceedings before the court, Mount Isa claimed against Thor Commander the $1 million it had paid to Zinfa High in settlement of the latter's salvage claim, an amount in respect of costs it had incurred in discharging part of the cargo in Gladstone and railing it to Townsville in order to keep its copper smelter going pending the ultimate arrival of the rest of the cargo in Townsville, and a declaration that it was not liable for general average contribution, which was being claimed in the foreign arbitration. That's to say, the Thor Commander was liable to reimburse Mount Isa Mines that sum for what the latter had paid Zinfa High. In arriving at that figure, Justice Rearies considered the various considerations listed in Article 13 of the Salvage Convention and came to an evaluative judgment. In view of the calm conditions, the relative ease of the operations, and their short duration, others might have reached a different conclusion, but it's hard to identify any error of principle in the approach taken. It would appear to be consistent with that of the full court in the only other Australian case to arrive at the sum of a reward under the Salvage Convention, and that's the case of the La Pampa in 2007. The fifth issue was, is Mount Isa Mines entitled to its transshipment costs? Justice Rearies concluded that the actions taken by Mount Isa Mines in discharging part of the cargo in Gladstone and railing it to Townsville amounted to reasonable mitigation measures, and the expenses so incurred were claimable. There is an interesting question here with regard to the proper construction of a letter of indemnity, LOI, that was required by the owners of the Thor Commander to be given by Mount Isa Mines before the partial discharge was allowed. The LOI contained an indemnity for the expenses of and any liability arising from the partial early discharge. His Honour found that the LOI was given to cover any liability that might arise from someone claiming in respect of the discharged cargo by presenting bills of lading for it in Townsville, in other words, essentially a conversion claim. That might be regarded as a curious result, because the cargo was discharged in Gladstone to the named consignee against presentation of the straight bills of lading, which were then spent, at least to the extent of the partial discharge. In any event, that is not an issue that I intend going into now. And the final issue was the negative declaration in respect of the GA liability. In view of the conclusion with regard to fault and causation, the court declared that Mount Isa Mines was not liable to the owners of Thor Commander in general average. The issues that were considered were essentially relevant to the court's discretion in making a declaration and need not be considered here. So I now go back to the salvage issue. As I indicated, no submissions were made on the question of whether voluntariness is a requirement to claim a salvage reward under the Salvage Convention, or whether Zinfa High acted voluntarily. Those matters were not in dispute. That much is apparent from His Honour's identification of the relevant issue as, quote, was Thor Commander in need of salvage by Zinfa High? His Honour nevertheless reasoned as follows. In the context of deciding whether Zinfa High rendered salvage services, the judgment states that the definition of salvage operations in section 14 sub 1 of the Navigation Act of 2012 does not create a precondition that the salvor will be a volunteer, but that rather salvage operations consist of an act or activity undertaken to assist a vessel in danger in any waters. Thus it was reasoned, the character of an act or activity that fulfills the definitional criteria determines whether the act or activity amounts to salvage operations for the purposes of those parts of the Salvage Convention that have force of law in Australia. In the context of deciding whether Mount Isa Mines' settlement of the salvage claim against it was reasonable, the question of voluntariness was considered again. It was again pointed out that the statutory definition does not include voluntariness as a requirement, and it was held that whether the act is done voluntarily or under statutory or official compulsion does not change its character as being salvage. His Honour nevertheless gave consideration to whether the salvage was voluntary at common law, citing the Beaverford and Sarpin. His Honour concluded that since the legal obligation on Zinfar Hire to assist Thor Commander arising from the AMSA direction was an obligation owed to AMSA and not personally to the owners of the Thor Commander, the services were voluntary. As will be seen, I consider that conclusion to be uncontroversial. Indeed, it was common ground. I'll now consider briefly the question of voluntariness, or perhaps not so briefly, the question of voluntariness at common law. And it starts with an interesting story. On the 19th of October, 1898, a fire broke out on board the steamship Butshire, which was at that time moored to a wharf known as Dalgety's Wharf at Miller's Point. An alarm was rung and received at the headquarters of the Metropolitan Fire Brigade. The superintendent and his eight men went to Dalgety's Wharf and ascertained that the Butshire was indeed on fire. The superintendent went on board and asked the master of the ship if the assistance of the fire brigade was wanted, to which the master replied, "Yes, as much help as I can get." The superintendent then said, "I shall require a guarantee for all expenses incurred by the brigade." The master replied, "Yes, I have already told your officer that we will pay all expenses." After a very long time and with considerable difficulty, the fire brigade and the crew on board the Butshire managed to succeed in extinguishing the fire. Thereafter, the owners of the vessel alleged that it was the duty of the fire brigade to extinguish the fire, and that under the circumstances, the fire brigade was not entitled to salvage. Justice Owen, sitting in the New South Wales Vice Admiralty Court in the case styled Fire Brigade Board and Elderslie Steamship Co., accepted that voluntariness was a requirement for a salvage reward and that the Metropolitan Fire Brigade was a public body whose duty it was to extinguish fire without fee or reward within the city of Sydney. The respondents argued that the ship, being moored to Dalgety's Wharf, must be considered as part of the wharf, and as such, there might be danger of the fire spreading to the wharf and adjacent buildings that the fire brigade was under statutory obligation to protect. However, His Honour held that, and I quote, "A ship moored to a wharf is as much afloat on the waters of Port Jackson as if she were anchored in mid-channel, and cannot be held to be within the boundaries of the city of Sydney, which extend only to the high water mark on the foreshore." The salvage was therefore held to be voluntary, and the plaintiffs were entitled to a salvage reward for extinguishing the fire. Justice Owen defined salvage as follows. A salvor is defined to be one who, as a volunteer, assists a ship in distress, but the services rendered must be such as the salvor was not bound to render under any pre-existing obligation. His Honour then went on to cite with approval Lord Stowell's often quoted description of a salvor in The Neptune. A person who, without any particular relation to a ship in distress, proffers useful service and gives it as a volunteer adventurer, without any pre-existing covenant that connected him with the duty of employing himself for the preservation of that ship. More recently, the judgment of the New South Wales Court of Appeal in 1982 in the ship Texaco Southampton concerned whether the crew of a tug could claim for salvage in circumstances where the owners of the tug could not claim because the tug had been contracted to do the tow, and the work that was done did not go beyond the terms of the contract. That issue was decided against the crew. In the course of reasoning, Glass J.A., with whom Samuels and Mahoney J.J. agreed, set out a series of propositions which he regarded to be a coherent body of doctrine, including that towage services that are provided to a vessel in danger do not qualify for description as salvage services unless additionally it appears that they were rendered by volunteers. It is by now well established that acting upon the orders of a third party does not deprive salvors of the necessary element of voluntariness. That proposition was most clearly established by the Court of Appeal of England and Wales in 1916 in the Sarpin, one of the cases cited by Justice Rearies. Although the salving vessel, the Simla, had been requisitioned by the Admiralty and had been directed by the naval officer in command to proceed to the assistance of the Sarpin, that did not mean that the services rendered by the owners, master and crew of the Simla were not voluntary. It was put like this: the services were rendered voluntarily as between the salvors and the salved, which is all that is material. The Simla owed no duty towards the Sarpin. The test of voluntariness is only applicable as between the salvors and the salved, and if the services be voluntary in relation to the salved, that is, not rendered by reason of any obligation towards him, it is quite immaterial that the salvor has been ordered by someone who has control of his movements to render them. That proposition might be seen to be contradicted by a judgment of Justice Ryan in this court in 1991 in a case styled the Margaret Philippa. That case held that where two ships belonging to different owners are entered in the same mutual insurance association subject to terms by which they are bound to the association to render assistance to each other, no salvage can be claimed when they do render such assistance because such assistance is not given voluntarily. Justice Ryan held that the rules of the association imposed an obligation on the insured owner to the company to render assistance to any other ship entered in the company which may require assistance. The effect of that obligation was to make a claim for salvage unavailable because of the absence of voluntariness. Justice Ryan cited Clan Steam Trawling Co. and Aberdeen Steam Trawling Co., a 1908 decision of the Court of Session, as authority. However, in that case, the reasoning made clear that the rules of the mutual association applied between the members. That is to say, the members owed the obligation one to each other and not only to the company. The reasoning in the case thus demonstrates that the mutual insurance contract was construed as providing obligations between the ships, not only to the insurance association. The finding in that case is accordingly consistent with the principle that for there to be no voluntariness, the obligation must be owed to the sold vessel and not to a third party. This point seems to be overlooked in the Margaret Philippa, which is therefore doubtful authority against the overall proposition. The result of the above analysis is that if a claim was brought for a salvage reward under the common law against the Thor commander, it would have been the case that unless the Zinfar High owed a legal duty to the Thor commander that went beyond the duty generally owed by ships to one another to assist in times of crisis, it would not be deprived of a salvage reward on the grounds of voluntariness. That is why voluntariness was not an issue in the case. Dealing then with the Salvage Convention, although Australia initially inherited the English common law of salvage, the regime is now found in the International Convention on Salvage of 1989. The convention was given the force of law in Australia in 1998 by amendments to the Navigation Act of 1912. The Navigation Act of 1912 was repealed by the Navigation Act of 2012, but the Salvage Convention continued to enjoy the force of law, being carried over from one act or one statutory regime to the next. Section 240 of the 2012 Act, which is the current position, provides that there is no common law claim for salvage independent of the Salvage Convention when the convention applies. The Navigation Regulations of 2013 list the provisions of the Salvage Convention that have the force of law in Australia. Article 1 of the Convention, which includes the definition of salvage operation, does not apply in Australia. However, that definition was included in the Navigation Act of 1912, when the convention was first given force of law in Australia, and a definition in slightly different but for present purposes materially the same terms was then included in the Navigation Act of 2012. As observed by Justice Rearies, that definition does not include voluntariness as an element. It is, however, worth observing that the definition of salvage in Section 294 of the Navigation Act of 1912, before it was amended to enact the Salvage Convention, also did not include voluntariness as a requirement. Article 5 of the Salvage Convention also does not apply in Australia. It deals with salvage operations by or under the control of public authorities, which are the bodies most commonly affected by the requirement of voluntariness at common law, as illustrated by the Bute Shire. Article 5, sub 1, preserves the governance of such operations by national law or other international convention, and Article 5.3 makes it clear that the rights and remedies of public authorities under a duty to perform salvage operations will be determined by the law of the state where the authority is situated. Article 17, importantly, provides that where services are rendered under a contract entered into before the danger arose, no payment is due under the provisions of the Convention unless those services exceed what can reasonably be considered as due performance of the contract. In summary, at the time of the Thor Commander incident in January 2015, a claim for a salvage reward in Australia was governed by the Salvage Convention, and as already mentioned, given the terms of Section 240 of the present 2012 Navigation Act, there is no common law claim for salvage independent of the Convention where the latter applies. Casting our minds back to the position taken by Justice Rearies and the Thor Commander, it will be remembered that His Honour found that there was nothing in the Navigation Act or the Articles of the Salvage Convention to qualify the character of salvage operations as being voluntary. However, one could just as easily have reasoned that since there is nothing in the Articles of the Salvage Convention, or indeed the Act, which indicates that voluntariness is no longer a requirement of salvage operations, it remains a requirement. This conclusion is supported by the long-standing principles of common law, which I have just discussed. As set out by Allsop J, as the Chief Justice then was, for the full court in El Greco, Australia, Proprietary Limited and Mediterranean Shipping Company, it is well established that subject to any contrary intention revealed by the domestic statute making an international instrument part of domestic law, the ascertainment of the meaning of and obligations within an international instrument that is made part of the domestic law is to be ascertained by giving primacy to the text of the instrument, but also by considering the context, objects, and purposes of the instrument. The manner of interpreting the international instrument is one which is more liberal than ordinarily adopted by a court construing domestic legislation. It is undertaken in a manner unconstrained by technical local rules or precedent, but on broad principles of general, as it's put in the cases, acceptation. The need for a broad or liberal construction is reinforced by the matters which can be taken into account under Articles 31 and 32 of the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties of 1969. The relevant historical context of the Salvage Convention is recorded in the report of the Comité Maritime International, CMI, to the International Maritime Organization, the IMO, that was approved by the General Assembly of the CMI held in Montreal in May 1981. The report notes that in March 1978, the Amoco cadets carrying approximately 220,000 tons of crude oil, that's double what the Torrey Canyon was carrying, was wrecked on the coast of France and caused the hitherto largest oil pollution accident. That accident gave rise to the perceived need to consider reform of the international law of salvage, and in particular, to explore whether new rules should be prepared in order to cover casualties which may cause a threat of pollution, thereby creating a direct and primary interest of the coastal state in the salvage operations. There is nothing in that context to suggest that the qualification for a salvage reward with regard to voluntariness required to be revisited. Indeed, the CMI working group, which prepared the first draft of what became the Salvage Convention, stated in its report to the CMI General Assembly that I've already mentioned, that it recognized the desirability of preserving as much as possible of the principles of the existing law of salvage. It was stated that the main objective has been to prepare a set of rules that, on the one hand, would encourage adequate provisions of salvage services and the efficient carrying out of salvage operations, and, on the other hand, would be capable of wide international implementation. Moreover, the president of the CMI, a renowned expert in this field, the late Professor Francesco Berlingieri, explained that the concept of salvage operations was not greatly modified in the new draft. The travaux préparatoires to the convention make it quite clear that the existing rules with regard to voluntariness were intended to remain, save to the extent that national law imposes a different position with regard to public authorities. That was provided for in Article 5, which you will recall was not adopted by Australia. In the written paper I've prepared, I then analyse some of the travaux a bit further and identify where it becomes apparent that what I've just said about it being reasonably clear, that there was no intention to alter the rules with regard to voluntariness. What comparative international case law there is also does not support the conclusion in the Thor Commander that voluntariness is not a requirement of salvage under the Convention. In 2011, the South African Supreme Court of Appeal, at that time the highest court of appeal on non-constitutional issues, in the Cleopatra Dream, adopted the contrary view. In that case, the Cleopatra Dream encountered a catastrophic failure on its way out of the port of Saldanha on South Africa's west coast. The plaintiff, the National Port Authority, dispatched two tugs to tow her to safety within the port. The plaintiff was the only public authority which could legally operate tugs in the port by virtue of a statutory provision. Following a successful salvage operation, the Port Authority arrested the vessel and claimed a salvage reward. The vessel then argued that the plaintiff had no right to claim salvage since the rescue services were conducted by the plaintiff according to its statutory or common law duty and were not voluntary. The plaintiff denied that argument and averred that it was entitled to the salvage reward by virtue of Articles 5 and 17 of the Salvage Convention. The Supreme Court of Appeal held that the Salvage Convention evidences no intention to exclude voluntariness in respect of salvage operations performed by a public authority acting under a duty. The Court thoroughly analysed Articles 5 and 17 of the Salvage Convention and held that the correct interpretation of Article 17 is that a salvor only qualifies for a salvage reward if its salvage performance exceeds the degree or breadth of its statutory or contractual obligations. The Court held that voluntariness is an essential element of a salvor's right to recover a salvage reward, and therefore Article 5 does not recognise the entitlement of a public authority acting under statutory duty to a salvage reward. This is an issue for domestic law. There are also other South African cases, earlier South African cases dealing with this issue, including a case of the Mbashi, which was a case I did as a junior earlier in my career at the bar. And the difference between it and the Cleopatra Dream is that the vessel was just beyond the port limits when the tugs intervened and towed her back into port. And so on that occasion, they were entitled to salvage, a bit like the Bute Shire. The requirement that a salvor must be a volunteer is justified on the basis that the reward of generous salvage payments has long been recognised as a proper way of promoting the rescue of endangered maritime property and preventing catastrophic environmental disasters. The rationale for preventing salvage rewards for a person or authority under a pre-existing duty to render assistance, whether the duty arises from a contract or otherwise, is that a person under such a duty should not be encouraged to fail properly to comply with their duty and, by doing so, cause or contribute to the danger necessitating salvage. Those considerations apply equally in the context of the Salvage Convention. In the circumstances, the statements in the judgment in the Thor Commander with regard to voluntariness under the Salvage Convention, aside from them being obiter, should not be taken as the last word on the subject in Australia. Thank you.